No.
I am not a number. I am a free man. And then running away from a large white ball.
Okay. Good morning. Welcome once again to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. I'm the host, Rob Hearn. With me today is Fraser McInnes.
Hi there.
Did you hear that? I said is. I didn't say are. And that's because I'm not going to say Chris James. Because
no.
He's not with us.
He's not.
He?
He's sound asleep in his bed or kind of shuffling through to the kitchen in his slippers making a cup of tea, I imagine.
Probably.
Yeah.
What I imagine is that he's woken up behind a skip in central London with a newspaper over his face after some industry event. Because there's industry stuff happening this week, isn't there?
That's right, yeah. There's all sorts of stuff. And Chris is our, apart from being our leader and sort of sovereign entity of Pocket Gamer, he's also the networking guy par excellence who heads off to these sorts of events.
Yeah.
And schmoozes. Whereas Rob and I are much more hermit-like and tend to stay indoors and shut ourselves away from the horrors of the outside world. But I hear that that's not necessarily going to be the case for you, Rob, over the next 24 hours.
No, I'm being dragged away from the comfort of my office, which is actually spectacularly messy at the moment because it's been made smaller because of the inclusion of a couch. And also Susie's taken to using it as her study place. She's got exams coming up. It's just piles of books and my stuff, and it's a real tip. And I'm being dragged away from it to go and judge mobile games in Marseille. I'll be leaving for that later.
That's very exciting, though.
Yeah. Yeah. I get lots of reading done on the plane. I'll get to play some games, I guess. So it should be fun.
And I just warn you as well, the French, great though their food is, they're not terribly accommodating when it comes to vegetarianism.
That's all right, because I've already decided it's going to be holiday rules.
All right, so what's that?
Holiday rules is I can eat meat.
What, really?
Yeah.
Ah.
I started doing this exactly 2 years ago, because I went to Thailand.
Uh-huh.
And before I went there, because I'd had holidays before, a sequence of holidays where I'd gone to places where it was difficult to get vegetarian food, and I'd just gone from place to place. And I started to feel bad about dragging Susie around all these vegetarian restaurants instead of all these restaurants that were fine but just weren't good enough for vegetarians. So, ruining her holiday. So I decided when I went to Thailand, because there was unlikely to be any vegetarian food there,
uh-huh,
that I would just eat meat. But when I got there, there was actually quite a lot of vegetarian food, like any other major city. But I'd already made the decision by then, and I don't want to go back on my decisions.
No, especially when it's when it's concerning the succulent sweetmeats that can be offered by another culture.
Yeah, so that's it. So because I don't want to ruin Susie's holidays by making her go to vegetarian restaurants, whenever I'm on holiday, I eat meat. And that was always the way. When I became a vegetarian, I said, but I'm not going to be silly about it. I'm not going to be one of these people who's, ultra sensitive and squeamish. That's not what it's about. It's about thinking it's the wrong thing to do, but I'll still, do it if called upon. But as it happens, you tend not to be called upon. When people hear you're a vegetarian, they're very accommodating.
Sure.
But this is the...
In this country, they are.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there are in a lot of places. They're not.
Yeah, sure. No, I didn't mean to sound somehow racist or elitist there, but it is definitely the case in I think in a lot of other parts of Europe that vegetarianism isn't quite as common, so they're not necessarily as well equipped. Certainly in Germany and certainly in France, I've found that. And but stick to beef. Outdoor reared, usually it's very very difficult to rear cows indoors. And that usually means that the animal's been a bit happier during its life.
I always go for the fish and the chicken because there's a hierarchy to me of how much the life is worth.
Right.
And I think to me, like a cow, a chimpanzee, a dog, a cat, a horse, these things these are relatively high mammals with a greater level of intelligence than a fish or a chicken. So a fish or a chicken are more comfortable about eating them. Those are closer to carrots.
Right, okay.
A cow is closer to me. The chicken is closer to a carrot. So for that, it's about how valuable the life that has been sacrificed is.
Okay, that's a bulletproof rationale.
Chicken lives.
Chickens don't matter.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
Brilliant.
So that's what's going to happen. But, so if I'm confronted with meat, I will simply eat it and enjoy it, I think, even though I am a vegetarian.
Wonderful. I'm envious.
Yeah, so that's where I'm going to be. By the time this podcast goes out, I'll be in France. So you can imagine me there, if you like.
Munching on chicken. Cordon bleu.
Flesh off the skull.
Yeah. Absolutely.
News!
Right, yeah, so that's vegetarianism covered. What about iPhone games?
Well, we could talk about those. It's been a pretty busy week, actually. Let's start off with the main one, which is that GTA Chinatown Wars came out.
It did, yeah, how about that? Out of nowhere. Well, not out of nowhere, but almost. Well, it was certainly... There was very little fanfare accompanying its App Store debut, wasn't there?
It was a huge surprise. I knew that it had been delayed, but there was no sense that it was imminent to me. And then, it was one of those mornings. Just logged into work, Chinatown Wars is all over the place.
Yeah.
And what the hell? Am I still dreaming? Am I still asleep? I have days like that.
Yeah.
And this was one of them.
It's quite a nice surprise, though. I was when I woke up that morning and like you, came across all this unexpected Chinatown Wars news. I was like, oh, brilliant. That's going to be something that I can download with gusto. Because much as I love iPhone games, I don't know about you, Rob, but I do feel because of the sheer volume of iPhone games that I play, that they are sort of cheapened a little bit. And it takes more and more to impress me and more to get me excited. And so... this was certainly one of those occasions when I was genuinely really quite giddy with excitement when I heard that I was within moments of actually playing a game that I'd been waiting for a long time to come out.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I was giddy. I wasn't quite giddy, but I was. See, to me, I don't know if you have this as well. Probably not to the same extent. To me, if I see something like that, there's a part of me goes, "Oh, that's exciting," and a part of me goes, "Oh, bloody hell." Because that's going to be work, isn't it? I'll be staying behind tonight, making sure everyone's, there's lots of writing about this on the site and stuff.
Sure.
So the news, Tracy was very good, and he did the news and the review sort of overnight while we were all sleeping, which is, that's handy. That's the best way for content to appear, I think.
Definitely.
Overnight. And then we did a comparison with the DS and PSP versions, which Spanner... did for us, and and compared them in terms of price and what you're looking for, because they're all quite different really in a way, even though they're the same game, you get different things out of them. For me, the main thing you get out of the iPhone version is a version that costs £6 instead of considerably more.
Yeah, that's very true.
The DS version costs, if you go to Amazon, DS version is £6 now, I think, and the PSP version is £20, so...
Right. So okay.
£12. It's only half the price of the DS version. So sure. It's not as much cheaper as you might have thought, but still,
it's a full £14 cheaper than the PSP version, though. That's quite a lot.
Yeah, £6 for a game like that.
Yeah, I know. That's just silly money, isn't it, for a game that good? Well, of that caliber, at least. We'll talk about whether or not we think it's good later. I think probably we'll say yes, but in our next podcast, in fact, it's going to be one of the games that we talk about, I think, isn't it?
It is, along with two others. So that's happened. That's a piece of news. No one can take that away from us.
No.
A Sega Genesis emulator.
Oh, really? From who?
From who? From who?
It's not from Monomio, is it? You're not stalling for time, are you?
From whom? Did you know that what you meant was from whom?
From Sega. Whom, sorry, yes. It's from Sega, right, okay.
It's from Sega, and it's a freemium.
Right.
So it's, you get the emulator for free. And then you download the games and you pay for the games, which I think is a very good model for this kind of thing.
I agree. Yeah, that's awesome.
It's a great thing, actually. And later today, we'll be publishing a hands-on preview with it.
So what sort of titles, what sort of Mega Drive classics are already available, do you know?
It's launching with Space Harrier 2.
Ooh.
It's packaged with, so I guess that's free.
Oh, right, okay. That's like when you bought a Mega Drive back in the day, it came with Space Harrier 2 for free as well.
Oh, did it? I never had a Mega Drive.
Oh, what?
I was a computer guy. I had an Amiga. I never had any. I had a Master System for a while because I saw somebody playing R-Type on theirs and thought, my God, that's good. I had a Spectrum at the time and it was such a big jump.
Yeah.
And then I was never really a console person until the Xbox 360. really, up until that point.
Quite a massive leap.
Yeah, it was all. The Amiga, and then a big gap. Didn't do anything. Just played guitar, and then got back into gaming. But I was always a PC gamer. And the 360. I had a PS2, which I bought in order to play GTA San Andreas. And then once I'd played that game, I sold it or gave it to my sister. I can't remember because I had no interest in it. It seemed rubbish to me compared to a PC gaming.
Yeah.
And so the 360 is the one that's changed that all. That's the console.
Okay. What other games?
I never had the Mega Drive. What other games? Sonic the Hedgehog, Echo the Dolphin, Golden Axe, Shining Force.
Shining Force, is that not a really kind of hardcore 2D RPG that's got a serious following?
Oh, no, I never played Shining Force.
Neither did I, but I'm sure I've read. I could be totally wrong. Maybe it's something else entirely.
I know about Sonic the Hedgehog. I know about Echo the Dolphin. Never played it, but I saw the adverts on television. I thought, oh, a game starring a dolphin. Imagine that. Golden Axe, of course, I've played. I've played on MAME arcade emulators and completed with infinite credits in about 15 minutes. It's always disappointing when you can do that.
Yeah, yeah.
You realise as an adult that arcade games are so small. Spanner speculates that Streets of Rage... will be coming in Shinobi 3, Splatter House 2, and World of Illusion, starring Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck.
Oh, yeah, I completed that game in about 20 minutes when I was actually a young'un, because it's one of the most easy, ridiculously easy games ever released, but it's actually a very charming and quite a good-looking game.
Excellent.
Yeah,
well,
but
so I think that's good, and I think that's... I'm going to download that, actually. I haven't...
Yeah, I'm holding out hope for Sonic 3, or Sonic and Knuckles, even, if we're really lucky. They're two incredible... brilliant Mega Drive games. In fact, Sonic 3 is still, I think, probably in my top 5 games of all time.
Yeah, Sonic again. It's not. I played Sonic a little bit, but not. I didn't finish it or anything.
Yeah,
and I've got very limited. I've had very limited contact with that franchise.
Oh, it just improved so much over the two sequels. The second game was so much better than the first, and the third game just took it to a completely another level. It was just, I was blown away, properly blown away by Sonic 3. Which, interestingly, I read not long ago. I remember sitting with a tape deck up next to the television playing Sonic 3 so that I could record the music and listen to it, especially the end credits. And obviously the results were quite poor because my recording equipment wasn't very good. But I remember thinking it was amazing. And it turns out that Michael Jackson had a hand in writing the score for Sonic 3 because he himself was a massive video game buff and loved... all sorts of video game related things and had an extensive collection of arcade machines. And it turns out he had a hand in Sonic 3 soundtrack, so there you go.
Yeah, that is an extremely interesting bit of trivia.
Yeah.
I've got two other bits of trivia related to Sonic the Hedgehog. If you're interested.
Yeah, I am.
Sonic, people may notice that Sonic the Hedgehog is always written with a capital T in the. This is because the is officially his middle name. It's true.
That's really cool.
Your crank.
No.
The other one is that there is a gene in the human body called the Sonic Hedgehog gene.
What, really?
Yeah. I can't remember what chromosome it's on. Let's look it up. But I imagine the gene was named after computer game character.
Right.
Let's just find out which chromosome.
Okay.
Yeah, Sonic the Hedgehog gene is.
Why is it so named?
Oh, they've all got funny names. Well, no, most of them have just got names that are just letters and numbers. Information like which chromosome the Sonic Hedgehog gene is on should be in the opening paragraph of the Wikipedia article. I do not have time to... Jesus Christ. This is all complex information. Unveiling. I'm sorry.
Yeah. But do you have any other background information as to why it was named that?
No, I don't.
Okay. Oh, well.
Just, I imagine the scientist who named it said, wouldn't it be funny if we called it the Sonic Hedgehog gene?
Yeah.
Maybe something like that. You know, they're very unregulated, these people.
They are.
The world of their own. They can do what they like.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, that's three pieces of Sonic trivia already.
I always loved that bit in Brass Eye when they're talking about this imaginary drug that Chris Morris made up called Cake, and he said the when they're given the scientific explanation for how the drug affects the human body, they've got this kind of really official sounding report where Chris Morris goes, "Cake affects the part of the human brain called Shatner's bassoon," which I thought was particularly clever and very funny. Yeah,
yeah, you can almost believe it as well.
Yeah,
you can always imagine that there's a bassoon-shaped module in the human brain.
Yeah,
good old Brass Eye. Did you know? Oh God, it's all about the trivia today.
It really is.
Charlie Brooker. Was one of the writers on the paedophile episode.
Was he really?
Peter Geddon, yeah. I learned that the other day.
I missed Newswiper the other night. I must catch that on iPlayer.
Yeah.
For any of our American readers who don't know who Charlie Brooker is, he is a vitriolic journalist and TV personality who started out life as a video games journalist writing for, was it Nintendo Power?
Dreamcast.
Was it Dreamcast he started out working for?
Stu commissioned him. He wrote for Stu.
Really? Wow. And he's now the author of several books and various TV programs, and he's a very, very, very funny, cynical, misanthropic person who pretty much hates everything, but he's very well worth checking out. Writes a great column in The Guardian as well. So,
yeah, he's good. So that happened. So what have we done? GTA's come out. Sega Genesis emulator is coming. There's a preview going up. By the time this podcast airs, there will be a preview on the site that you can go and read, and it runs through a few of the games. Space Harrier, Sonic the Hedgehog, Shining Force, Echo the Dolphin. So look out for that. I think that's good. It's good news, isn't it?
Yes, that's great news, in fact, definitely.
Yep. Another piece of news from this morning, actually, just when we got up. Square Enix is bringing Final Fantasy 1 and 2 to iPhone. So these are a couple of the older top-down RPGs.
That's big news. I wonder if that has anything to do with... I think we ran a news item maybe a fortnight ago, or maybe a little bit longer than that, about kind of one of Square Enix's big people, one of their kind of influential designers or developers, had been set aside to work exclusively on iPhone stuff. But I can't remember whether or not that was for the benefit of like an original release or if it was for ports like these that we've heard about this morning. But either way... it seems as though Square Enix is fond of the iPhone, because this isn't their first foray, is it? They've had puzzle stuff out there already on the iPhone.
What did they have? Wasn't it a rhythm action game recently?
Maybe. I'm sure they had that. Do you know that Final Fantasy puzzle game? Is it Final Fantasy Tactics or something? They had something like that on the iPhone. Well, God, what experts. This is...
ignorant idiots. Hang on. Well, we can find this information.
We sure can.
I'll just simply... God, I've stolen it. You know, distract them.
Okay.
Keep them busy.
I am currently booting iTunes, everybody, which is going to help me become more knowledgeable, which I will then pass on to you. I'm merely a conduit. Never let it be said that I'm... No, I actually do let it be said that I'm an expert. I'm very vain. Hold on, Rob, pick up the baton.
Information. I'll take over. trivia. Sonic the Hedgehog. You know,
you're quite right, Rob. You're quite right. Square Enix. I've got a list of their applications in front of me here, and they include Song Summoner, which sounds to me awfully like it.
That's what
it's, Hills and Rivers Remain. No idea what that is. Vanguard Storm, Sliding Heroes, and Dissidia Final Fantasy Game Guide, I think, which is like an iPhone game guide for the PSP game, Final Fantasy Dissidia. And they've got light versions of all of their games, I think, from what I can see here. And their games tend to be in the higher price bracket, so that would also suggest a decent level of quality. But, yeah.
But they've already been rocking the iPhone, and now they're bringing Final Fantasy. So this game, the closest kind of comparison on the iPhone will be games like Xenonia, which were originally mobile games. I think it's funny that this is so typical of the iPhone, isn't it, and the App Store, that Final Fantasy will be competing with Xenonia on the same platform, and you know they're pretty similar games, I imagine. I'm not an expert on this type of game, and I'm really going out on a limb here, but I would imagine that Final Fantasy is probably pips it, I would have thought.
Sure. I think fans would certainly... I think, fans of the genre would certainly say... I think we should ask John Jordan, shouldn't we? Because I think he's quite a big fan of the early Final Fantasy games, and he wrote the GBA reviews on Pocket Gamer back in 2006 when the Pocket Gamer was in its infancy, and I'm sure he would have something to say about whether or not Xenonia can stand up to Square Enix's famous titles, but it's still none of them do it for me, I have to say. I'm just not really that into that style of game. It's terrible because I do feel like I'm missing out on something, but I just don't have the patience.
I feel like that about almost all RPGs. We've had this conversation about Fallout.
We have, yeah.
And what's that other one?
Oblivion. Yeah.
Both games which I tried to like, and I from the description, I think yes, this is what I want. I want an open world. I want lots of missions. I want to be able to choose which missions I do. I want to level up. I want all of these things, and it sounds like the perfect game. To the extent that I've bought Oblivion once and I'm considering buying it again.
Yeah. Well, you can now get it on Games On Demand, so I would do that. Although it's a bit more expensive for
anything. That's on the Xbox.
Yeah,
it's just way too expensive. It makes me angry that that service exists, because you could just go to Amazon and get it for usually about a quarter of the price.
That's true. That's true.
You can get on Amazon. You can get a BioShock and Oblivion in a compilation pack.
Oh yeah.
I imagine it's about £15.
Yeah, that is honestly both of those games. Have you played BioShock?
Yes, and I'm not crazy about BioShock, but for different reasons. I think BioShock is... I think what people say about the atmosphere of BioShock is completely correct. Like, the design of it is amazing, and it's one of those games that's genuinely scary. I think games have a huge capacity to be scary. I thought that Dead Space was not scary. I think BioShock was much more like System Shock, which it's a kind of descendant of.
Mm-hmm.
And it's scary in the same way that game was, genuinely creepy.
Yeah.
The kind of the Art Deco stylings were all brilliant. Everything about it was brilliant, except the RPG elements were quite light, which suits me because I don't want heavy-handed RPG stuff. But it was just the first-person element of it was just not particularly appealing. There's a lot of kind of going back and forth across the same environment, and there's a lot of... It just wasn't a great first-person shooter. I think
I couldn't disagree more.
My standards of first-person shooter are... That's my genre. If I had to pick one genre to play, then it would be FPS. So I've played, a lot of them. And my standards with FPS, I'm very sensitive to anything not being... I mean, and obviously, it's a highly acclaimed game that a lot of people love, but I played that twice and got to about halfway through both times before thinking...
Did you not do philosophy for your degree, Rob?
Yeah.
Right, you have to finish BioShock, okay? It's I can't remember what author the yeah, that's right. It is based on like a very famous essay apparently by that chap, and it's and it's excuse me, and it's another one of those games that to kind of hopelessly vain and idiotic people like myself like to kind of trot out as an example of why gaming is not just, you know, moronically about running around shooting things in the arse. So yeah, I think it's I mean, besides, I mean, we really have to get off this, or I'm going to play cut it all out. But besides the fantastic visuals and the fantastically realized place, it's the story of that game is so compelling the whole way the whole way throughout. And I really do think, as well, as you get deeper into the game, that the weapons and stuff really evolve to become something quite special too. But
It's got a lot going for it. But it's just one of those. There are certain games where I know that it's not going to work for me. I know that my relationship with the game is not going to work because, and this could apply to iPhone games. Don't worry, we're on topic. Where I know, because I know that the next time I have to do something, I kind of wilt and think, no, I can't be asked for this. And that's, to me, that's how I got with Bioshock, was that, so I'd be going along and I'd hear a Big Daddy, and I wouldn't go, oh, great, a Big Daddy. I'd go, oh, right then, okay, I'll kill this Big Daddy. And then someone would say, you have to go somewhere. I go, okay, I'll go there. And that's it. There's just this,
yeah,
this quite a subtle thing where it's a subtle difference in a game. And it genuinely is a subtle difference between a chore and something you enjoy. Because even in games that you really enjoy, there can be chores. And that's what makes games interesting, is that you can do quite mundane things, and they can make the mundane exciting, and they can make the exciting mundane. But ultimately, that's what it comes down to. Most recently, incidentally, I had that with Red Faction. Gorilla. Same thing. It was just, everything about it was fine. It was good. The combat was good. I can see what everyone was saying when they said it's positive. But the fact of the matter is, every time I started a mission, I would get to the map screen and I would choose somewhere. And then I'd go, oh, I suppose I'll go there then.
Yeah.
And I'd go there and I'd set off on my journey going, oh, God, well, we'll get there quickly. And then I'd see this and I'd go, right, well, I better destroy that building then. And that's the difference. And for me, Bioshock, that was just it. Just one wrong thing that just made it feel to me more like a chore than a veg. Even though aesthetically it is clearly, you know, absolutely amazing.
You're a tough critic, Rob.
There's no accounting for taste, basically. It's the same with books. Like the books that I haven't got through that I know are good books, but I'm not good. I just don't enjoy them. So eventually you just have to, you can struggle through for a while, but eventually you just have to say, look, book, look, look, Name of the Rose, look, Ulysses, me and you, look, Rings of Saturn. I respect what you do, but me and you are just not going to make, just not going to work out.
Sure.
Sometimes you just have to part ways with a book, or it's not so much with a film. You can sit through a film because it's much more passive. But with books and games, where you have to put a lot in, if you're not enjoying it, you just have to say, no more.
Yeah.
Life's too short.
See, I think this is actually coming back to iPhone. This is becoming increasingly. I mentioned this already in this podcast. I think it's becoming an increasingly big problem for me, and that, much as I love the democracy that exists on the App Store and the fact that so many people who are clearly very talented can get games onto the system, it's really starting to cheapen the experience for me, because there are so many brilliant games out there that are genuinely brilliant. And I mean, like, of the sort of brilliance that, you know, if I was reviewing it and having to then obviously play it for several hours, I would probably give them an 8 or a 9, you know, so they're excellent games. But when I just buy them to play them just for my own personal enjoyment, I probably literally play them for a maximum of 15 or 20 minutes just to satisfy me, just enough to satisfy my curiosity of what everyone's talking about, and then I move on to the next one. And the ratio of games that actually break through that kind of cloud of I don't know, malaise is a tiny proportion, a really minuscule fraction. I probably 1 in 10 games probably manages to sustain my attention for longer than an hour now on the iPhone. And I really do think it's simply because there are just far too many, you know?
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting point about it cheapening the experience. I go with that, actually. I do think that paying more would in a weird way, you know, this is just human nature. In a weird way, it would make the games appear and feel more valuable.
Yeah, definitely.
I completely have that. I've had emulators in the past. So for, like, say you get a SNES emulator or a Master System emulator, and you get a load of ROMs, legal ROMs, of course, and then you start playing them, and you play each one for about 20 seconds, because as soon as you get killed, as soon as the slightest thing goes wrong, you just think, oh, well, I'll just turn this off and start playing another one. And,
yeah.
And you do find yourself thinking, I wish I had paid £30 for this, because I would milk it for everything it's got. I would just sit there and play it for, for 4 months.
And probably derive an awful lot of enjoyment out of it for just based on that extra playtime.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think that's probably the best argument, from a consumer's point of view. It's this weird double-edged sword, I think, because for consumers, clearly cheap games are better. And I always say, that's what I like about the App Store, is everything costs 59p. But at the same time, I absolutely take what you're saying, and I think you're right. Being able to get a game for 59p makes it disposable.
It does,
no matter how good it is.
And, yeah.
And even though it's exactly the same game as it might have been if it cost £10, you're just something in the... Because you're aware of its value, you're much quicker to just chuck it out. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's funny. It's like, do you know what I think? Is there's a strange sort of parallel emerging between the App Store's pricing system and the sort of the music industry of today. The art of the album is dying. And so a lot of artists, even artists that I would have considered to be, you know, album artists, maybe if those bands had come about maybe, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, are now going the route whereby it seems that the importance is weighted on 2 or 3 really, really big singles. And then, you know, the album can sometimes wait months and months and months and months after those singles have been released. Or even sometimes there won't be an album, but it'll just be a string of EPs, or even in some cases just a string of individual releases. And I think that, you know, on the App Store, it's kind of like developers are probably going to have to go the same route in order to make sure they can capture people's attention. They're going to have to blow their load on their first level so that people actually get to enjoy the best of what they have to offer, because these kind of longer, much more involved experiences with a really nice kind of arcing structure are curtailed by the pricing structure to the point where people are just never going to get to, a lot of people aren't necessarily going to experience all that effort and all of that design that these people put into it. And it saddens me to even suggest that might be a possible route for developers, but I do think it's a possible route nonetheless. There we go.
What a fascinating discussion. Say it without irony.
Sure.
Crystal Maze is coming to iPhone.
Nice.
Sort of all right, isn't it? Crystal Maze. I mean, it's a thing is, it should work because it's a puzzle game, albeit enacted by people, by humans in a room, which I suppose to me is the thing that puts me off it a little bit, is because the joy of Crystal Maze as a television program is that it is a person inside the puzzle, and all of the tension, the tension when watching the television program, none of it comes from the puzzle itself. It's all from, you know, seeing a physical person stumbling over things, falling into water, and going against the clock, and then having other
sure,
people go, come on, and the threat of them being locked in. And I would suggest that, so I suppose that may explain why I'm a little bit unenthusiastic about this, but it should be good.
Yeah.
O'Brien.
Do you know, the thing about the Crystal Maze on TV is that it was just far, far, far too difficult. Did anyone ever win that luxury adventure holiday?
I don't know. They always used to get like a weekend of Formula One driving.
Yeah.
Which I think is, and I still feel this way, because I'm very materialistic, despite myself, and experiences... A bit less now that I go on holiday sometimes. I never used to go on holiday, but now I go on holiday, and now I understand why you would pay for something, why you would pay for an experience rather than an object. But when I was a kid, I had no idea about that, and I would watch it, and then at the end you go, right, you've won a weekend away at Silverstone, driving a Formula One, and the guys would go, oh yeah, driving a Formula One car for 2 weeks, and to I used to watch that and think, what a pain in the arse. That's worse than not winning anything. Yeah. I'd rather just, because I would just go home and put the thing in a drawer and not go there. Because I think, well, what a. So I have to get the train. I have to travel to Silverstone to drive around and around in a circle. You know, I could just go to the local roundabout. Yeah,
that's the Crystal Maze, literally just torn to shreds. Let's
Ship
move
prizes,
on.
Crap prizes, but Richard O'Brien was a joy.
He was.
And the television program really did work because the. I suppose I watched it when I was a kid, and there was a genuine sense of menace that you only can feel when you're a kid. Nightmare used to do the same thing as well, that program about kids who would go about, and this, they would be blindfolded, and then other kids would watch them on a monitor, and there'd be computer graphics of them being in a dungeon or whatever, and the kids would go, left, left, no, duck, duck! And on the monitor, like a dragon or lava or something would be threatening their lives.
Yeah.
There was genuine menace about it, and the Crystal Maze had the same thing if you watch it as a child. So we'll see how well the iPhone game translates all these things.
Did well on mobile, it did, didn't it? I thought it was quite a successful game on mobile.
I think it sold quite well because it's games like that, it's a very casual audience basically, and games with brands. It's always like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire,
Deal or No Deal,
Golden Balls, Deal or No Deal. Those are games that do well on mobile, and they do well on PC as well, actually, because of the audience on those platforms.
Yeah,
I'm not sure whether the iPhone is the same kind of. I think the iPhone's a bit more hardcore.
Yeah.
So might not fare as well. Open Faint is coming to the Monomio C64 emulator.
Yes.
Very interesting. Open Faint is continuing its spread.
It is indeed. Yeah.
That's good. That's exciting. Open Faint is this thing that I still don't make the most of it, but I'm noticing now that on a huge proportion of games I download and play or update, when it starts, it says Open Faint login. And as I've said before, it's not properly set up for me, so I'm just a number.
Same. Yeah, I'm just a number as well, still on Open Faint.
Yeah, you get chased down the street by a large bubble. So that's a joke.
It flew over my head. I have no idea.
The prisoner?
No.
Patrick McGoohan?
No.
I am not a number. I am a free man. Boo. And then running away from a large white ball, like a balloon that chases him across the. The least menacing, villain in a television program. You've never seen this.
No, I've not. Is it? Was it?
It's quite like a. It's quite Kafka-esque.
It sounds existential.
Yeah, he's living his life, and then he gets taken away to. This place called the prison or the island or something like that, and it's on this weird, quite psychedelic island. It's I think 60s or 70s, probably 60s. So it's got that kind of psychedelic sensibility from then. But it's the setup is Kafka-esque. So he's there. He's been in prison, but he doesn't know why, and no one will tell him. And they call him. I think he's five. And they go five. You are misbehaving. And he says, I am not a number. I am a free man.
It sounds like Logan's Run.
It's probably a bit like Logan's Run.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that. That's where everybody dies when they get to a certain age, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
With the guy out of Austin Powers. Well, anyway, he's trying to get off this island. In the opening credits, I have to say, I don't think I ever saw an episode. In the opening credits, he's running across the field, and then chasing him is this just white balloon just bouncing over the ground. And you watch it and think, well, that is that's crap. I could have that. I could
Brilliant.
Just kick it. Kick it into the sea.
I could have fun with that.
Anyway,
how did we get onto that?
Follow the straight, I'm trying to follow the thread back to Open Faint on my show notes. I'm not a number.
I'm not a number. Yeah.
We're both numbers.
Yeah, I'm not a number except when playing, I don't know, sheep shearing, fleeced. What's it called? Fleeced, sheer terror. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to talking about that.
Yeah.
Teaser,
indeed. Yeah. Shall we? How are we for news? Are we newsed out yet, or have we still got more?
There's one thing that deserves a mention, which is just that some developers have set up a charity to give money to the victims of the earthquake in Haiti.
Sure, that does deserve a mention.
Yeah, let's mention it to demonstrate that we're good people. So that's happening. It's called Indie Relief. So somebody. Piatek Jimenez, he's called. Oh, that's the pronunciation is clearly wrong. Is donating 100% of his proceeds to the Partners in Health organization, which gives money to health services in Haiti. And since he's agreed to do that, just for one day, I think it was yesterday, actually Wednesday, all of his proceeds were going to this charity, and lots of other developers have signed up to do it as well. So that happened yesterday, and so lots of lovely iPhone developers sent some money to Haiti.
That's very nice. A heartwarming story.
Yeah, round of applause. Yeah, now we can move on, I suppose.
Right, let's go. I don't know what the hell we're going to do with Chris's endless quarry of mine metaphors, but we'll struggle on nonetheless. Rimmer. Rimmer. Right, so, right, hold on. We're in the Rimmer Mine, and we're going to chip some nuggets of truth from the walls of Rimmer Granite.
That it's cold down here.
It's cold.
The canary's dead.
The canary's dead. The air is stifling. And all we want really is a pint of bitter and a pie filled with some sort of nondescript meat, which Rob is quite clearly able to eat for the next 24 hours because he's officially on holiday.
Although so, I might, if they say to me, "Are you a vegetarian?" I will say yes, and I will eat vegetarian food.
Right. Okay. Okay. Because
this happened before. I went on a press trip to where was it? Madrid, and they didn't ask if I was a vegetarian, and they just. And there was no option. You just sat down. They put some food on your in front of you, and they put a big steak in front of me, and I ate that.
Nice, nice.
Crivens. Anyway, stop talking for the rumor mine.
It's not.
We're taunting ourselves with
steak. Steak. Are you the queen? Seriously, it's pork pies.
This is a past life I'm talking about. Before I was condemned to the rumor mine for the next 3 minutes. Without the aid of Chris and his encouraging metaphors. This rumour mine, though, we can be kept busy.
We can.
All of the rumours, which are abundant, just as they were last week, they are almost too abundant to manage.
Really. Yeah.
And they all relate to the isolate.
Yeah. It's going to be a nightmare after the 27th because we're going to have nothing left to talk about in the rumour mine.
There'll be facts. All the rumor mine will just everything we talk about in the rumor mine will become the news.
Yeah.
And there'll just be a vacuum in the rumor mine.
Yeah.
It's filled with water.
Yeah. It'll be a collapse hazard. We'll have to abandon it. Yeah.
But while we're here, we can talk about the launch, which is supposed to be March, but apparently in the UK it's going to be June.
Yeah.
Instead of March. March in the US, June in the UK. Apparently Apple is looking for partners, mobile partners, to subsidize the isolate. So it's been suggested it will cost $999. I mean, estimates vary between $800 and $1,000, which is obviously about 600 quid, 600 to, well, 500 to 600 quid, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But that's obviously quite expensive. I don't know if we've ever talked about it on the podcast about the, you know, what we think the value of the isolate is. But I certainly think £600 for an object that performs a function that other objects I already own perform is a bit steep. So Apple is looking for mobile partners, or Apple is looking for mobile partners, which may cheapen it, you know, it maybe take the cost down a bit.
Subsidize it, yeah.
So imagine that. So if it costs, I don't know. I'm trying to think of how much it would have to cost for me to buy one.
But this is all based on the assumption that it is, in fact, a tablet. It's still unconfirmed,
oh, yeah.
Isn't it?
Well, yeah. We're basically working on the assumption that certain rumours are true.
Yeah.
Another recent. I know that you've got quite a juicy rumour, so I'm just going to rattle through my own.
Sure.
HarperCollins is working on ebooks for the iState launch, and it's got a couple of other partners. The iPhone 4.0 operating system update is going to debut at the Isolate launch, which is of course next Wednesday, the 27th of January. 3 days after my sister's birthday, I should remind myself now. And another rumor is that it's not going to be called the Isolate. It's actually going to be called the iPad. That's what, for now on, I'm going to call it the Isolate. It's going to be called the iPad.
Yeah.
Because Apple trademarked that. So that's the kind of stuff that people have been saying all week.
All week, yeah. And also, something else that's happened, including to our very own Tracy Erickson, is that Apple has sent out a bunch of invites, which basically, we ran a story about this on the site, and we featured a picture of the invite. And it's basically just a white canvas that's been splattered with various different kind of splotches of coloured paint in a very sort of haphazard style. And then in the centre, there's the Apple logo. And underneath is written, come and see our latest creation, which suggests to me hardware. I think there can be no doubt whatsoever that Apple is going to be introducing some new hardware on the 27th, or announcing it at least. But the nature of that hardware, I think, is less set in stone. One of the interesting things about these invites, this is going to be a sort of segue from one rumour to another, is that a lot of the gaming press, the dedicated gaming press, were given invites, which is something Apple normally never, ever does. It's simply because it's never really kind of dealt with that realm. It's not really needed to inform the gaming press. It's always been much more involved with just the technology press. And so the fact that it's now actively pursuing the gaming press says that this new device is going to have a considerable focus on gaming, if you ask me. Which brings me on to my next rumour, which isn't so much a rumour as is. It's not baseless speculation. In fact, it's speculation that the Wall Street Journal has joined me in, that I'm joining it in even. And that's that the new device is going to be something that the whole family can use. And that's basically the Wall Street Journal part. It's been speculating that the device is going to be a sort of home entertainment device, you know, tablet, computer, or otherwise, that the whole family uses as some sort of media or entertainment device. But I'm going to go one step further and say that this is going to be Apple's proper next step into the gaming realm. I think there's far too much pointing towards gaming for Apple for this to be anything less than Apple's next big move. And, you know, we've talked about how the Isolate is going to, you know, it's going to establish a new device category. And I think that's certainly as possible in the gaming realm as it is in the portable computing realm. So, you know, this could be a new device in gaming that isn't necessarily a portable gaming device nor a dedicated home console either. And that is ultimately the rumor. So yeah, I think Apple is going to become a bona fide gaming player this year based on what they announce on next Wednesday.
Okay. Just to interrogate that rumor a little bit.
Sure.
Where's the niche for this thing? I'm trying to imagine the circumstances in which I might use a gaming device that is less portable than my iPod Touch, but more portable than my 360.
Well, this is really now just getting beyond the realm of rumor and straight into the murky waters of speculation, but I think it's very likely that Apple is going to, if this device is going to go in that direction, and I think there's strong indications that it is, that it's going to have some method by which that it can interface with your television at home. And the tablet itself will be an input device that you can use to you know, manipulate things that are happening on your television. That to me would suggest that it's you know that something that more than one person could use, and yeah, I think that's a potential niche that you know, sewing up this kind of, like, because obviously there are various other parts of Apple's offering in the iLife suite, such as iTunes, such as the Mail client, and the Safari browser, which in the gaming realm haven't really been bundled with gaming successfully, and yet they're definitely online functions that are synonymous with gaming and that people make use of on a single device, as the iPhone has ably demonstrated. So I think it's going to be a sort of home version of the iPhone, if you like.
I'm imagining it now. I'm imagining just putting it on the table in the living room and pressing the button that makes it display on television.
Yeah.
Played Field Runners on my TV. Yeah, I can sort of get with it. Although, yeah. I still think this. I still pretty much think if I'm going to be sitting, on my chair, playing something on my TV, then it's going to be my 360. But but if you can get on the browser and you can kind of plug it into your TV, if you've got high definition TV, which I guess increasingly people do, go online, go on Google with your little iPad on your living room table.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm getting behind it. I think maybe. That's quite exciting. Although still, like $1,000, £600 is
yeah. If they are going to go after that market, then it's going to have to come. It's going to have to be half the price that people are predicting, basically, for it to have any chance of penetrating the market successfully.
Yeah. But wow, I still like the fact that really the extent of what Apple has. This, you know, putting aside things like controlled leaks, which we assume take place. Really, all we know is a card with some paint splattered on it.
Yeah,
that's the extent of the information that is verified.
But you know, it's this. I had this sort of kind of almost not quite an epiphany, but definitely a kind of a moment of severe clarity when I was playing GTA on the iPhone the other day. And I sat there and I booted the game up and I was playing it. And after about 2 or 3 minutes, all I could hear in my head was, "Holy shit." I'm playing GTA on an Apple device that is essentially a console. I'm playing GTA on an Apple console. When did that happen? Do you know what I mean? It seems like such a short space of time between Apple even getting into the market to the point where it's actually got what many people consider to be a sort of pinnacle of games design operating on its system. It's like Apple's gone from a standing start to right up there alongside the other consoles in no time at all. It's almost surreal. So yeah, I don't think anything would surprise me at this stage.
Yeah, it's mad. So that's the rumor mine. We don't have anything else. We don't have any other rumors, do we?
I don't think we do. We don't, in fact. Unless we could make one up. Chris's whereabouts.
On the next Wednesday during Apple's little press thing, instead of revealing a device, a computing device, it's actually going to reveal a car. Apple is a car.
Yeah.
It's a hybrid, obviously.
Of course. Yeah.
And it's a car.
It runs on self-satisfaction.
Yeah. Steve Jobs can go 500 miles an hour. Yeah. Rather like, what's his name on that episode of The Simpsons?
Oh yeah,
that's where the joke comes from, doesn't it? But I can't remember his name. Bob something or other.
Yeah.
If only I could remember his name. Yeah. That's very good. God love The Simpsons.
Right.
I read a good book about The Simpsons that, if you read it, will make you love it even more. And it's called Simpsons Confidential, and it's just lots of interviews with the makers. Come on, let's get out of the room.
Okay, here we go.
In delirious.
I'm all right.
We're good. So what do we do now? I'm sort of lost.
Me too. We're flailing around in the dark here. There's been a lot of discussion in this podcast, though. It's been
immersive.
Yeah.
But I guess this is pretty much the end of this, isn't it?
It is. There's the competition.
Yes, go on.
I'm in two minds. Should I? We had not even a single entry. Actually, for this week's sound clip, so I think it must just be far, far too hard. So, should I just announce what the answer was and then move on to the next clip, or should we give it another week?
Let's announce.
Right. Okay. If you remember last week in the Rumour Mine, in fact, we were talking about a game which EA is resurrecting, which may or may not be coming to the iPhone. That game is NBA Jam, and the clip was from NBA Jam's options screens and in-game music, which I thought were quite iconic and quite memorable, but clearly I was wrong. So that was the correct answer. Don't feel bad if you didn't get it. It was very difficult. And here we are, yet again, another competition about to be played with another clip. Listen carefully.
We'll be right back.
So what did you make of that then, Rob?
It reminded me of certain childhood memories, which I'd, you know, rather not discuss.
Yeah, you probably better not. Okay.
So that's that. So send in your answers to Fraser@pokergamer.co.uk, I guess.
Yep, that's right.
What do they win again? iTunes voucher.
They win a £5 iTunes gift voucher.
Well, that's £5. You could get 2.5 Ricky Gervais audiobooks from recent Guide to range. He's really cashing in now, isn't he, on those podcasts? They used to be free. It used to be just infinite free podcasts from Ricky Gervais.
Yeah.
Then it was £2 for a kind of 3 hours of podcast. And now it's £2 for about 45 minutes.
Well, is there more now? Are there new ones?
He's still making them. Now he's regular. Because what he's realised, I think, just how lucrative it is in comparison to how much money it costs, how much effort he has to put in.
Yeah.
He just sits in a room with a couple of his buddies. Talks for a bit. There's minimal research, probably about 2 hours worth of preparation goes into each one, I would imagine. And then so they sit there and they record and then they put it out there at £2 a pop for about probably 50 minutes of entertainment, which isn't all that good value anymore. And makes hundreds of thousands of pounds every time he does it. It's actually a cartoon now.
What, really?
Yeah, on HBO, I think it's HBO, maybe another network. They've animated the podcast, so they just
Jesus.
They haven't recorded anything new for it. They just do the. They just take old podcasts, and they've animated them, and they're showing them on HBO.
And do they animate some of like Carl Pilkington's ideas for for unusual animals, or for film scripts, or for medical breakthroughs?
I think so.
That would be. I'd really like to see that. That sounds great.
Do like, yeah, I do like the podcast though.
It's very, very funny. It's the if anybody out there hasn't listened to the originals, I think you can get the original three big podcasts that he did to start it off for about $2.99 or something, and it's you'll never spend a better $2.99 in your life. It's hilarious and very, very worth it.
Yeah.
Other podcasts and audiobooks are available.
Including the one in which you heard the recommendation for that one. So that's good.
Yeah.
Do It Us is good. Joystick, if you're into gaming podcasts, Joystick Podcast. That's my tip. That's really good.
Which we can recommend that because they don't deal in the same fare as us, really. They're not the competition. They're our brethren, really.
They're our brothers, Justin, Chris, and Ludwig. Hello, if you're listening, which you're certainly not. So that's the end of this podcast. Let's wrap it up. Go to pocketgamer.co.uk, read our writings, give us a rating on iTunes. You know the drill, I imagine. So it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me with a mouthful of Oreo and tea.